Welcome to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and fraternity parties. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as I always am, by the rest of my toga-wearing brothers and sisters. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
I would like to say that I do not condone binge drinking.
That's important. It's important. The more you know.
Drink responsibly, kids.
The more you know. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
I would like to say that I'm a big proponent of binge drinking.
Well, you've just undone all the good that we've done.
That was quick.
Yeah.
A new record for us.
Look, jokes aside, don't binge drink. And this whole fraternity culture is alien to me. It was never something I've experienced.
Oh, but I did. I mean, I didn't join a fraternity, but...
We'll talk about it.
I think it's more American, but we'll get there.
Yeah. Shotgun Guy, we call him. All right, so we are here to discuss DC's Legends of Tomorrow, Season 5, Episode 11, entitled Freaks and Greeks, and I am on deck for doing the recap. So, as we open this week, everybody's pouring through the library for spells to figure out how to deal with the loom to allow them to use it without basically getting flambéed. Sarah and Astra are kind of volunteering to be the other two fates because Sarah already has some sort of weird godlike superpowers, and Astra because she's just super determined. They've even pulled
Sarah's them. Also rocking some awesome shades.
Well, the Gary brings her. Gary brings her some shades.
Okay, that's true.
Along with some books from John's house. They stumble across the Cup of Dionysus, which Nate says he saw in college, known as the Chug Cup, when he, from a rival campus, attempted to steal it from the fraternity where it belonged. As they decide to go back to fly to the Hudson University to steal it, we know that Lita is still on board. We learn that she was going to apply for college there, and so she and Mick are going to take a tour. Our team infiltrates, I guess, what is some sort of pledge fair?
I don't know what that was supposed to be.
There's a lot of questions about this because it includes a scene where somebody tosses Nate a beer in the middle of...
That didn't even happen, you know, in the 80s when I went to college.
Also,
when the drinking age was 18.
Yeah. Also, they're all clearly too old to be college students.
Yes, there's also that. But
I love that you went to school in the 80s, which is where, like, jocks would go down ski hills and just be jackasses and give people snow jobs and stuff.
Sure.
What?
Is that what you call it up there?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
We just call it shoveling
over somebody. Is that?
Yeah. Well, no. Okay. No. You take somebody's face and you push it into the snow.
Oh, okay.
That's just being a jerk, I think.
It's like, No, that's totally. Totally jerk. Guess what? We have a lot of snow a lot of the time. So. We have 800 words.
We have 800 words for obnoxious things you can do with snow.
Exactly. All the horrible things you can do with snow. We have words to describe every single one of them.
All right. Well, oh, Canada. Ava is dressed like the mascot. Everybody else is dressed in like weird pseudo college with the capital C like outfits. Nate
looks like such a jackass in that. Football uniform.
He does. Yeah. He does. He shotguns a beer that somebody throws at him after calling him like old man. And then we come face to face with the leader of the frat that has the cup, who is Dion, or of course, Dionysus himself. Turns out the only way to get the cup is to be in a fraternity or sorority, or what do they call it? Frorority. And win the challenge for the cup.
I don't know what is that. Is that a new thing?
I think it may be a co-ed.
It feels like
I think it's a co-ed.
I dig it. It feels inclusive. And
they were just called societies. They were.
Yeah, we had similar. Yeah.
That makes more sense than just like sticking two words together and getting cute about it. I actually end up liking Dionysus mostly.
I don't want to
be his friend, but I don't think he's a bad guy per se. Anyway,
we'll get there.
He's got rules, and he follows the rules.
Yeah. So Charlie and Astra pledge. We decide that the only way for this to happen is if people sort of try to join up with the fraternities and sororities. So Charlie and Astra attempt to pledge a sorority. Meanwhile, we have Mick goes on a tour with Lita with some super snooty people who are really rich and entitled. At the sorority luncheon, Astra and Charlie are kind of going at each other a bit. Astra keeps wanting to, like, basically take the cup by force. Charlie's trying to encourage her to be more subtle about it. Astra decides to play along with sort of the role of the, you know, like, whiny sorority, like, for stereotypical sorority girl. And it seems like it's working up until she and Charlie get into a fight and they all get thrown out. Astra, we look for a new plan, and Zari suggests starting their own sorority. Meanwhile, Nate, who at one point Mick has tried to pass off as Lita's dad, they go to the fraternity where Dionysus is to do some recon. Meanwhile, the rest of the team basically finds an abandoned house on Greek Row. They use a time portal into Constantine's manor to make their frat house. And then recruit a bunch of the kids who were the young women who were, like, also tossed out of the sorority because they all don't fit in. Nate, meanwhile, drinks Dionysus's IPA, which makes him feel great. And of course, he immediately spills the beans about what they're all up to. Meanwhile, we have a montage which includes Sarah teaching all the girls of the sorority to throw knives as they rebrand themselves. Don't call us heroes. Call us Deltas.
I laughed pretty hard at that.
Now, I liked that great too.
Just to sort of rewind a little bit.
I'm not even through
Dionysus,
yet.
Dionysus effectively roofies Nate, which is not cool. Like, he's an interesting guy. I generally think he's got a good heart, but there's a lot of this where he's just, that's not cool. Like, don't roofie Nate. That's a bad, that's a horrible thing to do to anybody.
Dion and Shotgun Nate show up at the house, and they eventually disqualify the women's sorority from participating. So Astra decides to do it her way, which is to basically set the fraternity on fire. Charlie talks her out of that and convinces her that there is a place for her in the Legends, even without even having to follow all the rules.
That was a really, really sweet scene. Also, the sponsor for this episode is Dr. Molotov.
We got sponsors again. That's great.
for all of the buildings you want to burn down, there's a Molotov for you.
This Molotov's for you. Shotgun Nate shows up again, reminds them that Dion needs devotion from his followers in order to maintain his power. So what that happens is they need to throw a bigger party at the sorority. Unfortunately, they get it all together, they decorate the house, and nobody shows up. So now they have to turn to Astra, who suggests sabotage. Charlie turns into Nate and distracts Dion.
Can I just say that given all of the things that happened in this episode, that is the most unrealistic. That is a house full of beautiful women. There's no way nobody's showing up to that party. Doesn't make any sense.
No. Well, you assume there's some sort of magic thrall there.
Right. And they don't know, right? Like, you know, you got to advertise.
Well, I mean, I know. I'm cracking a joke about, like, having six, however many it is, 6, 8, 12 beautiful TV worthy. Not worthy, but you know what I mean? Like, these are photogenic people standing around being like, why is nobody coming to our party? It's like, that's a bit of a stretch. Come on.
So they sabotage. Charlie turns into Nate and distracts Dion. Zari hacks into the playlist and replaces it with yodeling. Charlie lures Dion into his shed at the back, which is where all the booze is, just in time for Mick to set it all on fire. And when they show up at the Delta house to basically try to steal the party back, Sarah challenges Dion to beer pong. She, upon the handshake, Sarah uses her new powers to see essentially what Dion's going to do and handily beats him. Lita declares it the best father-daughter weekend ever. And as a result, they get the cup. They're all able to drink from it and acquire the powers of gods for a day, except for Zari, who is Haram, which I thought was a very interesting, nice little touch.
I thought that was really cool. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, Lachesis shows up on Astra to call in her favor for helping her kill John Constantine. I also, in the B plot, the continuation with that is at some point Mick goes back in time and donates to the university in order to get a building named after him. But it turns out that neither he or Alito feel like they fit in here, and they kind of bond over being outcasts. I have to.
Lita's rock and roll, which we'll get to later, but she's cool. I like her a lot. Also, that coat she's wearing is awesome.
Mm. Right.
I want to call out a few of my favorite lines. Line of the week for me was Dionysus's. I just got to keep it whimsical, bro. That to me made me laugh a lot. Also, the scene where they are debating what's going on with finding the cup and the loom, and the three recruits are, you know, just sort of look at each other and go, being a grown-up sounds weird.
I love it.
And Sarah has a great bit where Astra and Charlie, after they come back after getting kicked out of the sorority, they're like, well, they were going to kill each other. And Sarah's like, well, Astra was definitely going to go for it. You should hide that fork, Zari.
There's also, that scene. I forget what he says. I forget what Dionysus says, but Nate is in the background and he dabs.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, he's just talking about blah, 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 whatever, you know, and Shotgun here told me, and then he just he's just in the background and he dabs.
I feel like this is a really great week for Nick Zano, who has had a really... He's had to deal with like a lot of crap thrown Nate's way. And so in some ways, I felt like the whole Shotgun Nate thing, I know Guy mentioned the potentially reading as roofying, but some of it feels a little bit like in some ways he needed an outlet for all the grief that he has carried around. And so it lets him be sort of carefree instead, which is, I think, kind of an interesting dynamic for that character who has lost a lot in the last, you know, couple seasons even.
Right.
Yeah, I don't get me wrong. I didn't read it as that as I watched the episode, just thinking back on it. Wait, he basically mind controls the guy. That's not cool. Right. And the reason I thought about it is that the motivation that Dionysus has is that he doesn't want the Loomer fate to be recreated because it robs people of their free will.
Right. And the party will end.
Well, sure, the party will end. But it's basically look, free will is gone. And I like that about the character. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of messed up.
Well, and that's the whole reason.
That seems like it's a bad idea. And he remembers when it was like that. And he's like, I don't want that.
Right. And that's it's the same thing with Charlie. Like, that's the whole reason Charlie broke the loom is that she was sick of the predestination.
Exactly. Yeah. And he was celebrating it. He was celebrating her, like, oh, God, you did such a great job. Like, that was awesome. Like, amazing.
Yeah, right.
And then when he finds out that they're trying to recreate it, he's, you know, bummed in party terms. Also, what I liked about it was that this was a celebration of, not a celebration, but I mean or a condemnation. Whatever.
Condemnation?
It was a condiment. It was a ketchup.
It's the mayo.
It was a ketchup. It was a mayo sriracha mix. It was a great little condiment you can make at home very easily. Yeah, it's delicious. A little bit of pork on there. You're great.
The condiment.
What was I saying? Yeah, I haven't had lunch yet.
A condemnation of something.
I haven't had lunch yet. It's basically a condemnation of sorority culture or fraternity culture, I should say, more precisely.
Yeah.
And yet, I like that Dionysus, his basically at a step removed, he was he's about free will and consent. Do you know what I mean? Like he wasn't a hedonist or necessarily, I mean, a bit of a hedonist, but like wasn't like just get what you want kind of guy. He was more like let's everybody just have fun.
Yeah, it's not overplayed.
Is a different thing. It's not. It's certainly not a rape culture kind of vibe at all. Which is a. I think yet again, these writers did a good job of taking something that's like. This could go poorly if you do it the wrong way, and yet somehow they navigated those waters and made. You know, the god of self gratification. Somehow,
I was not enjoying. I was not enjoying the episode to begin with because it seemed like so many of the people were just so stereotypical. And yeah, you know, that whole scene with at the table bothered me. I was like, as I was watching that scene, I was like, I really don't like this episode so far. And then they managed to, of course, you know, turn the whole thing. And again, as we've talked about before, one of the things that we like about this show is that they take these genres. And so this is like, you know, Animal
right.
House, Back to School.
Frat,
I mean, all these typical things. And the funny thing is, like, instead of having the dean be the bad guy, the party animal is the bad
right,
guy.
Right, right. Well, and so they
turned that on its head. And then the other thing that they did is, they're setting up a sorority that is for the people who couldn't make it in the other sororities. So they're doing this sort of typical thing that they do in...
Yeah,
in
Revenge
these,
of the Nerds type thing.
You know, the stereotypical thing that they do in these movies. And then at the same time, Astra has this great, you know, moment where she says, I'm only your sister if I become like you. So they're still doing the same thing that they...
Right.
You know, that the other houses usually do in the bad, you know, in the well, not the bad movies, but like the movies that they're making sort of not mocking, but riffing on. And that was a good moment because it was like they brought it back around again.
Right. But it's not even that they want her. Like, I think that's Astra's perception of it. It's
yes.
not what they're doing. Right. Because the whole vibe of their sorority is essentially it's the Legends. Right. It's mm-hmm. we are a bunch of people who don't fit in anywhere else. And we make a team, a wacky team of time traveling, you know, superheroes.
Yeah.
And they just sort of import that culture into their sorority, which is like, yeah, we're the misfits. We're the people who don't fit in anywhere else. So it's not that we're here to conform because we're all going to be the same kind of misfit. It's that we're here to be all kind of individual and weird, but together, you know, like,
yeah, right.
Yeah. So I thought that was it was playing on what I think are, you know, most people would cite as the positive part of a lot of what those societies do, while managing to sidestep a lot of the real problematic parts. So I think that's a great point about making Dion the villain, though. I hadn't really thought about it like that. But even so, he's such a low stakes villain, right? Like he's not
right.
He's not evil. He's not doing anything.
He's
that's
not going to kill anybody. He's not right.
He's an antagonist because they want something that he doesn't
want
to give them.
He's got.
Right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
he's not like out.
Yeah.
To,
and
he's
it's
not
even
a mustache
understandable
twirler.
What he. Right. It's even understandable, despite the fact that I would never want to hang out with that guy. I would probably be like, oh, he's fine. He's a nice guy.
Maybe for a night.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, I don't know either.
It's not... Like, I don't think it's any of our
He's a bit much for us. Like, you know, I like to go and have a good time, but I mean, I'm way more low-key than that. That's not my style at all. But yet, when he explains why he's bummed out about this whole thing, it makes sense. It's like, oh, wait, you're plotting to take away free will. That's not cool. Like, I don't want that. So you understand, at least, while his motivation, and you know that he's not going to hurt anybody, seriously. Like, it's, you know, even when they blow up all of his mind control juice, he's just like, that was a cool prank, bro. But that's not cool. Like, he's not. He just shows up and does a beer pong thing. He's
right.
Not
I mean, like the stakes,
I'm a god and I'm going to.
As I recall, the like ante he puts up is like, if you win, you get the cup. And if you lose, you have to shut down the sorority, right? Like,
yeah,
it's not like
so
if you lose,
stakes.
I take your souls. I'm not like. He's not.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, this season,
yeah.
the villains have been the encores who are all like. To a person, just like terrible people from history, like literally are like mustache twirling villains. And this week we get an antagonist who is just much more like, I don't know, non-threatening and playful. And I think that was a nice change of pace from some of the like really weighty bad people we've had in the past several weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like it's right out of an 80s movie, right?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like, and it's not even at the level of like, well, guess what? We're going to close down the orphanage if you can't pay the rent kind of thing. Like that's cheesy as hell. And
Blues Brothers.
Thanks, man. Thank you. This was a great volleyball move, man. I bumped that up and you slammed it down. That was awesome. Yeah, but it's not even that high stakes, right? It's like, oh, the sorority closes that opened up.
Yeah, like
24 hours ago.
Yeah, 20 minutes
like,
ago.
This
yeah.
is on the other side, you get to win a cup that will grant you immortality for a day. It's like he's playing pretty fair there, right? He's like, all right, okay, I don't really want to hurt any of you, so let's do some beer pong.
Yeah, I enjoy that.
Do you
comes
know what
down
I didn't know
beer
what
pong.
Beer pong was until I was in my mid-30s. I honestly didn't.
Wow. Even I knew, and I am not a attender of parties with a lot of beer pong.
Our friend. I think that started being popular after I was
maybe.
In school,
yeah, I think so. Same with me. Like my friend, our friend Terry, well, Santa Maria. Now she's married to this guy Justin. She used to work at her brother's bar, and she was texting me at one point. And she's like, "Oh yeah, we just had a beer pong tournament, so I'm pretty in the bag." And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. I have no clue. What
guy like, doesn't like his drinking adulterated with games?
Yeah, right.
How do you?
Yeah.
Well,
it shouldn't be. You know, those things
true.
Lead to those things lead to some serious trouble. We had other games that we played, and that was. That was long ago and will never happen again.
Yeah, fortunately, the only person who drinks all the beers in this episode is a god who will presumably be totally unaffected by it.
He'll be fine. And Sarah is awesome, by the way. And I don't know if you guys noticed, she never called out that she was blind.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Yeah. I thought they were going to make a joke about, like, oh, everyone will leave you once you get beat by the blind woman, right? And, like, they did not. They stayed away from that. They did use it to some great comic effect at a couple points. Most specifically the part where they're in the video and they're walking through the hall and they're shot from above, and then they do like they line up and like Sarah just keeps walking and someone has to grab her and pull her back into line. I enjoyed that. That was funny. There's some good physical comedy bits.
I like the way she navigates most scenes sort of with an awareness of her environment.
Right. Well, as they point out, like she says very early on in the mission, like, I'm going to be fine on the ship. Like, I know the ship. It's going to be, I can make my way around this, but in the field, probably a little trickier. So, you know, she puts Ava in
charge.
Yeah,
but she's like navigating around people and whatever.
Sure.
And
yeah. No, I think they did a nice job of balancing it.
It's easier to do, but yeah, but whatever. I like that the character's play is competent, is blind currently. But they're not playing it up. They're not like, it's like, okay, this is clearly an issue, but she can still kick your ass at beer pong, which is, and I love that her excuse is not like the League of Assassins trained me to do beer pong. It's like, oh no, I just played a lot of beer pong.
No, it's that I also can see the future.
Well, there's that too, but I just, the Sarah that got on the boat with Ollie Queen all of those years ago had definitely played a lot of beer pong in her life.
That's fair. Fair. I was gonna say I did enjoy one little bit. They didn't go too heavy into like totally banana stuff this week, but the one part that I did think was funny, though it kind of went by really quick, is when they're recruiting all the different young women to be in the sorority, and there's the influencer, and they're like, someone sits down, and I think it's Zari sits down and starts texting with her.
Sorry.
And then they start exchanging gifts, and one of the gifts is a Bebo gif, and that made me laugh. Because
I kind of wanted it to be like Bat. Meta. I kind of wanted it to be like Batwoman, Supergirl, and Lila, maybe? I don't know. Somebody else. Until I saw these people, and I was like, okay, that's perfect. Like, they did a better job having just sort of random characters. And otherwise, you would have had to have written too many lines for these people to just. Whatever. It wouldn't have worked.
Oh, and another great line I thought was it was a nice little ding was Lita points out to Mick that these people think they're better than them because they have whales on their shorts, which is, I don't know, a reference to, Vineyard Vine? No, is it Vineyard Vine? I don't know. It's some fancy preppy clothing store, essentially.
Okay.
Which I thought was amusing.
So here's the thing. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
Yeah, you guys live on. You guys live in the wrong place for that.
I guess so.
I don't know. Also, I mean, I like nice clothes, but I'm not aware of a brand that has whales on you. I mean,
oh yeah, Vineyard Vines. It's pretty well known. It's very East Coast preppy, and their logo is like a pink whale.
Okay.
I don't know, man. I live on the East Coast.
I'm sure I've seen that, but.
Yeah.
been a while.
I mean, have you guys seen this new brand? I don't know what it's called, but it's got like a horse with a guy riding on it.
Yes, I believe it's Pulu.
I think you're thinking of a crocodile.
Oh, maybe. Oh, it could be a crocodile. That's true.
It's a guy riding a crocodile.
That's a guy
with a
see,
mallet.
I think that's what we. That's what the world needs.
The
more
real
of guys riding
the real
crocodiles.
Billionaires are playing crocodile polo. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I swear to you, I would pay money to go watch crocodile polo. That would be insane. I wouldn't because that is definitely Fall of Rome kind of stuff. Like,
yeah, really.
You know, riders getting eaten by a crocodile is probably the worst thing. Anyway, sorry, I cut you off.
That's okay. Two other things I thought were funny. Gary believing in Santa still.
Yes, Gary. Yeah, they had.
And then Snart, which I was surprised they didn't bring up Snart. That they didn't mention him, but they made a joke out of the word somehow.
Oh, they did make a joke out of the wood.
I guess it's a thing. I don't know.
That's
physically it feels like it could be a thing, but I just don't know if that's a word that's used or they coined it somehow.
I've never heard that before, but I also
I've never heard it before either, but
I was also surprised to see that they played beer pong with paddles. But I actually did some research on that after the fact, and Sarah mentioned specifically Dartmouth rules, and there is a Dartmouth version of beer pong where they play with paddles with the handles broken off, and I was like, I've literally never seen that. But again, we established not really my thing.
Yeah, and I am not sure. I mean, this representation of college drinking, is that still real? I guess maybe it still goes on.
As the person who's been to college
the drinking age,
the most recently,
the drinking age and
20 years ago. It was happening 20 years ago, but that was 20 years ago. Who knows?
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm a little surprised, but I guess it's probably relatively true. I mean, although it's certain, obviously, like that event at the beginning was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. That was weird.
So I've seen a lot of college kids because a friend of mine owns a club in Montreal. So I'd go to visit her, and my little brother would DJ there. So that was awesome. Blowing past all of the bouncers as an old man. past a huge lineup of young kids.
I got to back you up for 1 second. You said they were DJing there?
Yeah.
But were they also an assassin?
Well, we don't talk about Casey's assassin years.
Okay, but, just checking.
But he does have... he's got a sort of a sash made out of human scalps. So you've got to assume that he's, you know,
it's kind of a giveaway.
Bit of a giveaway. Anyway, whatever. Yeah. So I don't think the culture is the same as it was back in, like, for me, it was the early 90s. John, I know for you, it was the 80s.
Yeah. Late 70s,
like,
even.
2000s? 2000?
No. I split the difference. Late 90s, early 2000s.
Late 90s. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think the culture is quite the same. It still exists. But I would have... I guess what I'm trying to say is that in a club where everybody's drinking and really getting messed up, that kind of culture was not visible to me. On the other hand, it was a club with a lot of Asian and black people around. So that could change the fraternity culture in the United States. Seems to be a very predominantly affluent white person culture, right?
Probably.
I would imagine.
This kind of fraternity culture anyways, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I will say this. I think it's also something, I think that's a great point, that is like often socially and racially striated, and that also, I think in some ways very regional, like not even regional, but like localized. Like there is some national level of that, but I think different schools, it manifests in different ways. And there are, of course, there are many schools now that have abolished a Greek system or never had a Greek system. So I think it's probably less common. And that, again, you probably tend to see it more at schools that are on the more affluent end of the spectrum or potentially on the more, I don't even know how to quantify it, but like...
Well, conservative, but with a small C, right?
Yeah,
like not
sure.
Not necessarily...
Old school, right? Traditional.
To use American. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's like, I don't mean Republican per se, if to map it onto American political scope, but conservative in like, well, this is the way it's always been done, and this is the way we're going to keep doing it.
I mean, my school, you know, my school definitely had fraternities, and I went to one fraternity party like my freshman or sophomore year. It was most assuredly not my thing.
It took me a while to figure that out.
Yeah.
I went to a bunch and then I realized I am not having fun at these.
Yep. I had some friends like who, you know, rushed fraternities and whatever, but I didn't like, you know, people I knew sort of my freshman year of college and then kind of fell out of touch with because they got into that. And then like the people they socialized were the people that they were in the fraternity with. I mean, different sort of thing, but I also went to a school that was like, you know, I don't want to say conservative because I don't think that's right in either sense, but like a long, you know, running traditional. Maybe? Yeah.
Traditional is probably a better word. Yeah, I wish I'd use that word rather than conservative, but
yeah. Anyway. So, but I overall, yeah, kind of a more lighthearted take at sort of the popular culture, like this scene through the lens of popular culture rather than necessarily a commentary on the actual existence of these things.
Right. So this to me is a riff on the 80s movies that we grew up on, right?
Right.
I don't know if you guys remember, like in the 90s, it felt like there was a rash of stories about crazy hazing rituals and stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. You know, and I guess just to wrap this all up, ultimately, I think the kids are all right. I don't think that the things that were happening back in our day are still happening.
There's definitely
bad stuff that happens. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, that's why I didn't like the beginning of this episode, because it seemed like it was very negative, and some of it seemed over the top and unrealistic.
Yeah,
but they brought it back around and they made it good.
And I want to say, to Guy's point, they actually made a point of the, like, there's the scene where Nate's trying to get the guys to hit him with the paddle. And they're like, seriously, man, we don't do that anymore.
Right.
Still a funny scene.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's do a ritual, shall we, Guy?
It's a level 2 biff. So level slightly less enjoyable than the week before. I think I've given 2-3 biffs in a row. 5 biffs, of course, being the best. And then we've got... Alex and John Jr. Because this rating system is basically created out of ancient Greek texts and it's dumb. Yeah. I liked it. I was not completely enthused by it. I, like John, had a bit of a visceral reaction to the beginning of it. They did turn it around because these writers are good. Like they know what they're doing. They have an intent. They know how they want to communicate and how they want to form the world around them. And they have fun doing it. And you can tell there's so many fun scenes in this episode that's just great. Ultimately, I think maybe my lack of enthusiasm is less on the episode and just more on my reaction to that kind of culture as a whole. Just not really their fault, but still, whatever. That's my rating. That's how I felt about it. And that's really all I can say.
John?
Yeah, it's a biff. Many of the same reactions that Guy had. And yeah, like my initial reaction was just I didn't like the sort of stereotypical ness of a lot of the characters at the beginning, but they fixed it by the end, and at the end, by the end, I was really into it just because they were doing what we love about the show, which is taking genres and using them to make their own thing, which turned out really well. So
yeah, they celebrate and subvert once, which is pretty great, you know, especially when you've grown up with the genre, which at least you and I think, you know, we were watching those kind of movies in the 80s and being oh, look, boobs, which, you know, I'm so thankful they didn't have a shower scene in this that, you know, And I'll wait. One other thing that I didn't call out is that I really love the relationship between Sarah and Eva. Ava. They're just really caring. I just like the way she gives her a kiss after she wins beer pong and holds her and just is generally just, they're just great partners. They're,
and the team relationship comes out in this one too.
I agree.
Exactly. Which is good.
Yeah.
That they all do everything together.
Yeah.
Except for Constantine, who really disappears for most of the episode.
Right. That's true.
But that's fine. That's okay. On par. We don't need him.
We don't need him all the time. In fact, I don't even know why he was in this episode. It was pointless. I think Zari gives him sexy eyes at one point, but
there is a bit. There is one line because he says, "Careful of the gargoyles because they bite," and she says, "So do I." But it's kind of not.
And then he walks off the scene, and she's like giving it like to his back. She's kind of into him. And I'm like, that's weird.
Yeah, really. They set it up last week, so who knows where that's going. But I will round out the reviews. I actually feel more or less on par with you, although I wasn't as bothered at the beginning of the episode. But one thing that I really did like, and one thing that's impressed upon me towards the end of the episode, was how many of the prime movers in this episode especially are women, which is, you know, the majority of the crew, for one thing, but all the recruits that they bring in. There's a lot of episodes, or a lot of episodes, there's a lot of scenes in here with Charlie and Astra. Astra is growing on me. It's interesting to see how she fits in with the crew. It feels like it's fun to have her go up against Charlie, because as Charlie points out, she was very similar, right? Like, she was not a team player when they first recruited her. And it's fun to have that dynamic of somebody who's sort of come through the other side of that, and suggesting that she can be redeemed. Of course, you know, she's not without her own trials, because as we find out at the end, she's going to have to decide how much she feels she owes Lachesis, and what that's going to entail. But I enjoyed having that dynamic with those two characters. I was actually a little puzzled at first why they didn't send Zari into the sorority, because it felt like she was a character who would have just been able to nail that. She seemed a more logical choice to me. But they still, you know, I think it's just, we wanted an episode where we got Charlie and Astra to play off each other a lot, and that worked nicely. But yeah, just in the end, when they have the lineup and everybody standing around, especially all the sorority sisters, like, the only, you know, you have Constantine is gone for most of the episode. Nate is brainwashed for most of the episode. And Mick is off doing his own thing with his daughter through most of the episode. So this episode is really like 90% women, which is great. And I enjoy that dynamic. It's so well done that it's like, it's not a thing that you would even really think about. It's just, here are these characters doing this stuff.
Astra really grew on me this episode.
Like, yeah, well, she had a chance to do something other than chew the scenery and be angry at Constantine, essentially.
Right, right. So before I started, I know you've got more points, but before I started watching this episode, I somehow clicked the wrong episode in iTunes, and I started watching when she was in hell and Constantine was visiting her, and she gets served a plate with like a giant pork chop with two bones in it, and I'm like, oh man, I'm so crushing on this girl, because that is that is a meal that would serve a family of six, and she's just decadent enough that she's going to eat it all herself, and that's awesome. Anyway, so then I had to skip to this one, and she's obviously feeling more, she's out of her element, and she feels more vulnerable, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And her vulnerability is to sort of try to assert herself. And that conversation with her and Charlie in the alleyway when she's going to Molotov somebody's house is, I think, it's brilliant. I think it's really great. It's very, very thoughtful and touching. She's like, I don't want to be part of your stupid reindeer games. And the answer is like, yeah, okay. Don't worry. There's still a place for you. You don't have to come to the stupid meetings.
Yeah, no meeting. I mean, that's essentially where I was going with it. I think it, in part, feels a little less consequential than some of the episodes we've had in the last few weeks, so it did not land as strongly for me as some of the earlier ones, but it's still a good solid episode, so, you know, I still qualify it as a biff. There we go. Three biffs.
Okay.
Done.
Cool. I mean, what are the odds of us giving three biffs to a show? It's
to this show. Yeah.
To this show. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
It's almost unheard of. Yeah. We don't even beat up on S.H.I.E.L.D.
That's true.
That's also a good show.
It was just Arrow.
I know.
It's just Arrow.
I know.
Which, you know.
Which we also liked, but we were more critical.
I loved Arrow, but
it's,
I mean, there
spottier
was
than both of these shows.
Right. There was definitely times where you could have a little bit more fun with Arrow.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we gave out more biffs than not.
Yeah, I don't even think we ever gave out an Alex. I don't think.
I think I did. I feel like a while ago I did.
Yeah, you probably did. Somebody's probably got a record.
Like before last, you know, the last two seasons.
Yeah. The Alex Hill that I will die on is do not watch Captain America from 1990. Don't.
Yeah, I still haven't found the TV show one yet, but
probably for the best. Yeah. all right, let's do a real quick superhero sweep, and then we'll get to letters. So not much for superhero sweep this week.
I have some follow-up, though.
John has some follow-up.
Because last week I said that I was bored by Flash,
mm-hmm.
and I caught up on Flash. I haven't watched last night's episode yet, but I caught up to the previous ones, and I realized the thing that was bugging me about it is I hate doppelganger plot points, and I'm for some reason I've never really liked them. I can handle them as if they're in one contained in an episode, but this one is running along for a while.
Because you're a Skrull, John. I think that's the answer.
And I find it racist. But I caught up, and you know, not to give anything away, but I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I'm now back on board with Flash. So
same with me. I also caught up on the episodes. I think I had three to watch. I think the next one comes out Thursday.
At least
for me on Netflix.
The last one, I think the one that aired Tuesday night here, I think is actually the finale because of the shortened season. I believe it is.
Okay. Yeah, anyway, Mirror Master, which is, I mean, at this point, we're just going to call it Mirror Master because it's the exact same. You'd be crazy not to think that that's not
She Mirror is Mirror Master. She's based on a comic version. She's just a gender-swapped version of a comic version.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Yeah, I just didn't want to give anything away. I don't know where people are in it. But yeah, basically Mirror Master. Interesting character. Sort of interesting motivation. The doppelgangers having agency was interesting. I don't really. Want
yeah,
to talk
I'm
about
not sure exactly.
I don't know.
I'm not sure exactly why that happened. You know, why that happened other than plot convenience, but it was okay.
It was okay, but I think the notion is that because whatever. Spoilers.
Yeah, I mean, why did she start changing her mind when the other ones didn't?
I think because she had more intimate interactions.
She was exposed.
She was immersed into love and being a human being, or you know,
I suppose
accepted as an entity.
What is that saying about Singh's relationship with his husband? Man,
yeah, right.
Yeah,
or
Camilla and Cisco.
Camilla and although I guess he was away for a while, right?
Yeah, they did. Also, we didn't really see them interact once Camilla got replaced. There's really not a lot of the two of them together.
Right, they never showed that.
Yeah, I'd really given myself the power of, like, quote, with all capitals in it, the power of love excuse for, for Iris. But, yeah, the more I think about it.
Yeah, I don't understand why it would only happen with her, but that's whatever.
Maybe
it's
they'll
okay.
explain.
It's not, the, it's not I, the biggest problem in the world.
I liked,
but I loved that scene. I loved the fight. I loved that he was basically unpowered, and I liked the resolution of it.
I also enjoyed, as I thought, I knew when John texted me, I was like, I knew this was the thing that you were going to comment on because it was the thing I enjoyed enough. Was the Barry's conspiracy board. I thought, to me, that was one of the best scenes in this episode that got me, or in the past week, where it's like, got me really on board with this. Is like, Yeah. Oh, yes, he's right. But he doesn't know he's right. And he knows it looks crazy. Yeah, but it also really looks crazy.
That's his second conspiracy board, right? At least.
Well, hey, I mean, you got to dust off the yarn.
He was right the first time, too.
Yeah, dust off your yarn, dust off the corkboard.
Yeah. I don't know why they've never done the question. Somebody do the question.
Someone must answer the question this fall on the CW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, we'd watch that, right? Mostly because whenever you asked me to do a recap, I would just talk about a question episode and you would have no choice but to listen.
That seems about right.
Yes.
Yeah, so not bad. I've also actually really enjoyed the past couple Batwoman episodes in which they bring in a fairly significant Batman villain who I think is who they've not, I think, ever done in a live action show, which I kind of enjoyed. Who was set up earlier in the season.
Can you say who it is? Is it
I can. Mad Hatter? We saw it earlier in this. We saw Mad Hatter in Gotham.
Right. True.
It was Hush, who we who they set up weeks and weeks ago by having Tommy Elliot, who is like Bruce Wayne's childhood friend, who becomes Hush, and they finally they paid that off. Show. Yeah,
yeah.
And it's kind of creepy and effective. I kind of dig it. So that show, there's a lot for me that works on that show, and I know a lot of people have been more critical of it. But yeah, I think there is a lot for me in that show that I really enjoy some of the dynamics. There's some stuff I think could be improved, but it feels very first season-ish. Like they're kind of got their footing now towards the end of the season, and I think they kind of know where they want to go forward from that. So I'm intrigued to see how it plays out. I think they have one episode left.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to see a garbage first season, watch Star Trek The Next Generation. I got one. I know, seriously.
I will say, I did recently watch
TV. There is some racist thing. They're like, Code of Honor should just never be shown again. It should be put in the Library of Congress and just.
I was on an episode of Random Trek that I think is coming out soon, in which we drew totally randomly Encounter at Farpoint.
Oh
yeah, that's a rough one, and it's a two-parter.
Yeah, you got to walk that off.
Yeah, it was.
You know what? I'm really glad I'm really glad that's you and Scott, because at least you have a friendship that can get you through that. Like, imagine if you just picked somebody that he didn't really know and Encounter at Farpoint came up, and it'd be like, hey, today we've got Oprah Winfrey, and guess what? We're going to watch Encounter at Farpoint. That would be the worst.
It's no good, yeah. Oprah really is not a fan of season one. That's what I hear.
No, yeah. Famously so.
Famously so.
Yeah. Well, she's pals with LeVar Burton, so that's another 80s deep callback that I think most gets and very few people do.
Sorta, I guess. I don't even
They were both on Roots together.
They're both on Roots.
I was gonna say it's Roots, right?
Yeah.
There is so a couple other things I was gonna mention. One, I think some show renewals have started to come in, plus pilot pickups. Still no word on Green Arrow and the Canaries. That's still hanging out there, but there's been some casting stuff with the Superman show, Superman and Lois, that they're doing, and then we also also the CW bought all of the first season of Swamp Thing, apparently, which is a weird kind of
that's weird
incestuous sort of thing, because I guess they bought it from somebody who also owns, I guess half owns them. I don't know, it's a little complex. Anyway, so that may show
good.
Up
I got
least.
Like eight episodes in. I think they only aired 10.
Yeah, I'm not sure then if that... I guess that means they'll air them all. I guess this is the point of, like, we don't know when production on shows actually will start up again and how many episodes we can get, so let's buy something that's already made that we can air and put commercials
on. Swamp Thing had a bit of an X-Files feel to me.
Yeah.
But extended out over, like, that the whole... Like, you know, every now and then, like, X-Files would have, like, a weird episode that was, like, I don't know, Swamp Creature... eats dog, you know, whatever, and then the FBI somehow show up to investigate it.
Who else are you gonna call?
Right, but it has that but extended over many episodes, and I like the feel. I thought it was pretty smart, and I could see them doing a good job with it.
Yeah, well, I think it's, you know, an expediency thing for the CW more than anything else. So maybe I'll get around to watching it now. We'll see. The other thing was, oh yeah, Stargirl starts, I think, this week or just started. I haven't seen anything of it yet, but it's out there. I'll probably watch the first episode or two. It's got Sportsmaster, so we have to watch at least that far.
Yeah, I know. I gotta watch when that happens for sure.
Yeah, so we'll see how that plays out. I'm kind of curious, especially because it's the first new entry since they quote unquote resolved the multiverse thing. So I'm just kind of curious about how that plays in, if at all. I assume they ignore it. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was the New Mutants, which is the movie which we had discussed before and is hanging out around there in the ether, has been once again rescheduled to August, originally intended to be released in April 2018. So
2018,
two and a half years after its initial.
And I was looking, I was in a conversation with some other people about this movie and about reshoots, because somebody had was wondering if people had thought that they had done reshoots, and they were wondering if maybe the reshoots had anything to do with them bringing it into the MCU, which I assume would not have been the case in any regard. But the director just came out a week ago or something and said that they had never done any reshoots.
Yeah, I would guess that everything that was done after that point was kind of done from the studio's perspective, not the director's perspective, and that it wouldn't have involved shooting more footage, possibly just re-editing different cuts.
Yeah, right. And he was talking about how the fact, like, you know, it was shot 3 years ago, probably. Right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these actors were relatively young at the time. They weren't kids, really, but they were, you know, in their early, at most in their early 20s and some in their late teens, I think. And 3 years later, they look quite different.
Right. Right. And it was
come back for reshoots because you look totally different than you look.
Yeah, CGI does wonders. They also apparently originally planned to do a trilogy, not happening.
I assume this movie is just gonna, if it ever does actually get released, it's its own thing. It's not part of the MCU, and it's just gonna, you know.
I'm just amused that it was something that they felt that they keep pushing into the theater rather than just shrugging and being like, no, let's just throw it on streaming service. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Especially, I assume it's not going to be great.
Especially with an August date where it's like, I don't know, that's 3 months from now. I'm not convinced anyone's going to the movie theater by August.
No, I'm probably not going to go.
Certainly, yeah.
Certainly not going to go to see this movie.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I'm probably not going to go at all.
I don't know, if I'm gonna have a risk factor, it's going to be for something I actually want to see.
Yeah, something that's probably going to be really good.
Yeah, yeah. So. Will not hold out a lot of hope for that, I guess.
Yeah.
Since everything is still kind of shut down, not much is going on right now. I suppose we're just kind of waiting. I was thinking today about the Black Widow getting pushed back, and just thinking in general about, like, man, it's the longest we've gone without an MCU movie since the MCU started, I think.
I was kind of confused by that because I thought it had already been pushed to November 6th, but was this just official now?
The Black Widow thing? They originally were like, it's not coming out in May. And then they scheduled it for November, which essentially replaced the Eternals.
Right.
It's just sort of a cascading, like, then the Eternals replaced Doctor Strange or Shang-Chi, I think. And then Shang-Chi replaced Doctor Strange, et cetera. Everything just rolled back.
This is annoying because, you know, I mean, eventually I will die. And this means that there's one less MCU movie I will see.
Boy, that got dark.
John, I would come and give you a hug, but that may just accelerate when you die. So...
I'm just going to point out the MCU could end before you do. If they have to, if they never make movies again, for example.
I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
It may be like Doctor Who, where it just never, ever.
I think,
ever,
yeah, I think, it, I think eventually they'll do, I would imagine that they will do some sort of thing that they, like they did with, in the comic books with the Ultimate Universe, and they'll do it, they'll do a reset somehow, but.
Probably. I mean,
eventually they're going to have. This is a gravy train. I don't think they're. I mean, well, do you think that they'll ever stop making?
No,
these
I mean, it's a gravy train as long as it is, right? Like, if the market drops out of, you know, making big blockbusters or something because people aren't going to movie theaters or what. I don't know.
That's
like
a possibility.
There's a lot of. There's a lot of possibility of things going differently.
You've just got to outlive Kevin Feige plus 10 years. You know what I mean? Like,
how old is Kevin Feige? I don't think I can do that.
Don't get any ideas.
Oh my god.
Unless
I mean, hey, we've done a lot of kidnapping. We've done a lot of kidnapping. Why don't we just step it up a notch?
He's 11 years younger than me, man. I don't think this is gonna work.
Wow.
Yeah.
I believe in you, John.
Also, I need to get that goblet. That's what I need to do.
That only works for one day.
As long as it's the day that I'm supposed to die.
Yeah. So if that's the one day that you choose to storm his compound while taking machine gun fire from his guards, then you know.
Yeah, I got questions about the one day thing because, like, can you just go back and drink it again?
I don't understand it. Yeah. I didn't. Some things with this show.
It's the time honored.
I don't try and drill down on
it. It's the time honored Henry Jones Sr. drinking from the Holy Grail question.
Yeah.
Right. It also just doesn't make sense. Like, plan what you're going to do right before you do it, then drink it. Don't just drink it and be like, look, we're all aces. Now we've got 24 hours to try to figure out what we're going to do. Like, have a plan. Then suit up. Like that,
I assumed that was because that was their only opportunity to drink from the cup. Like, he wasn't going to
Dionysus is going to take it back.
Yeah, so I think it gives a nice time crunch.
He can hang out on the. He can hang out on the ship.
He doesn't want to hang out on the ship.
You think him and Mick couldn't have a good time? I don't think Mick would get along with him, but they would definitely get drunk together.
That's true, but that's a low bar.
Yeah, fair enough.
A low bar. All right, that's enough of superhero sweep. Let's do a quick letters page before we wrap up. So we had two letters this week, but dealing with a similar thing. So we questioned a couple weeks ago what the name of Mick's daughter was, and we thought it was unusual that it was spelled in a way that we did not think was like related to like classic mythology or anything like that. And both reader Steven and reader Dennis wrote in to tell us that Mick's daughter shares a first name with the guitarist from The Runaways, Lita Ford. And that I think there is a reference somewhere in the show. That's the favorite band of hers.
She mentions that.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So that's on us. We're all the wrong kind of punk rock people, apparently. We don't go to frat parties and we're not punk rock. That's our problem.
No, here's the thing. I'm not. I should have known that. I'm of the age.
You're very punk rock.
Listen to... not anymore. but I've thrown a few Molotov cocktails in my time. No, I should have known that. John should have known that. Like, that's, you know. That's,
I suppose.
Not me.
Yeah. Well, I didn't. But.
Well, not you. You're old too.
I'm definitely the wrong person.
But wait, all I'm saying is, A, I thought her name was Leia. So that was
you
not.
You were way off.
That was not helpful. That, you know. And then when Lita came up, I blanked. And I just spaced out. But yeah, thank you to the two readers who wrote in to let us know that. I love it. I think that makes a lot of sense. Also, Runaways, cool band.
Indeed. If you've got a letter, please send it in. We're here. Biff at theincomparable.com or at BiffCast on Twitter.
We're just the fax machine.
Yeah, we're just here. Yeah, you hit the fax machine, drop it over the transom, send a telegram, singing telegram.
Tie it to a brick.
Tie it to a brick, throw it through guy's window. I don't know why guys, but it's going to happen.
I'm up on the eighth floor. So if you can
throw... I think that's the reason why.
If you can throw it through my window... Good on you. You're welcome to. You are also going to be a contestant.
Someone could easily throw it through my window. Please do not.
Yeah, don't bother John. John.
Oh, I do actually.
John's already way too circumspect about his life as it is. Just don't threaten the guy anymore than he needs to feel threatened.
I got to throw out. I actually have another letter here. It appears to have gotten filtered at some point, but I happened to just turn it up as I was looking for those other letters. So I'm going to do it live. We're going to read this letter live. Dear Biffcasters, if the current coronavirus-related rescheduling of various superhero movie sticks, the 2020 cinematic comic book crop will look like this. Birds of Prey on February 7th, Wonder Woman 1984 in August, Black Widow in November, possibly the New Mutants, which we just discussed, getting rescheduled. All four of these have a woman at the top of the bill, which is a bit of a turnaround historically. Does this mean anything? His suggestions, this is reader Paul, suggests, are superheroines more resistant to the virus? Are female-led movies getting dumped into what could be the worst box office year in our lifetimes? Is it just a coincidence? And do you guys want to go see Wonder Woman with me in August, please? I just need to see human faces again. Yours, faithfully, reader Paul. Reader Paul.
Where do you live?
Maybe he has a UK address, so that's not happening.
Oh, that's going to be difficult. Well, we can, whatever, we'll dispatch James Thompson.
Jeez. We'll dispatch James Thompson. He's expendable.
We're going to send, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He does not agree to this in any way, but we're still going to...
Send someone from the British office.
Yeah. I don't know. Whatever. Raise some money for your local food bank, and maybe James Thompson will come and take you to a movie. This is not binding in any way.
No.
And James is going to be very upset to hear this.
He does not want to be involved in this.
But it's funny. So, you know, yeah. Maybe we'll, whatever. We'll mail you, I don't know, Greg Berlanti's finger or something.
No. Whatever. No, we will not. We will absolutely not do that. I would like to clarify, we are not doing that. Greg Berlanti is a lovely man.
I don't have him anymore.
Donated
Greg Berlanti,
lots of money.
Honestly, I swear to God, it seems like a really... lovely person. When we kept making those jokes, I hadn't really known much about him, but he does seem like he's a very conscientious.
He's moved on to bigger things too, so you know, we'll let him be. I will say, in answer to Paul's queries, I think getting them dumped into the worst box office year in our lifetime. Is a coincidence. I mean, nobody could have predicted this. There was no way.
It's a coincidence. Wonder Woman did great. And especially with the Me Too movement and a bunch of garbage coming out of California, Hollywood, well, both, to be honest, and the whole country, the world, everything sucks. Whatever. Back on point, I think that greenlighting a lot of these sort of movies made sense in order to. Frankly, capitalize on a cultural moment. That they're coming out now is a factor of it being 2+ years after.
Yeah. It's how making movies works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Take some time. So, yeah. Go ahead, Dan.
So the collision with the pandemic is unfortunate, but also unpreventable. I think it will be interesting to see what... the end result of that ends up being, because Hollywood is enough of a occasionally self-fulfilling prophecy that they would look at the box office numbers and be like, these all did terrible. We should never greenlight another superhero movie led by a woman. And everyone would be like, it's because there was a freaking pandemic, guys. You know,
I was concerned about Black Widow just because it's a character who is supposed to be dead. And I wondered how many people would be interested in going to see the movie. Since she's presumably not going to be a part of the storyline.
People can handle prequels, though, right? Like, that's a concept we've gotten comfortable with.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I don't know. I think
it's a little different if it's like, you know, I mean, a Han Solo thing, which, you know, didn't turn out all that well. It was, you know, I think I agree with you in general that it's a better movie than people give it credit for, but it, I don't think it did super well, right?
Because it did not great at the box. I mean, it did well in the sense of if any of us had made that much money, we would be very happy.
Sure,
but
exactly.
Disney has a different barometer for how a Star Wars movie should do.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I don't know. Hollywood will eventually do whatever the heck Hollywood wants to do. There are several movies here I want to, I really want to see Black Widow and Wonder Woman. Those are both the New Mutants, as John and I discussed, less so. And I still haven't seen Birds of Prey, but I don't know. I think it's unfortunate that this is the moment where it seemed like maybe things would tip a little bit more in that direction. And but life
hopefully,
finds a way.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully this all gets taken into account and
I think
because this, I think it's a real, I mean, I think it's a real phenomenon. I mean, and I think that the fact that these movies have done better than Dopes in Charge expected should not go unnoticed.
Yeah, I mean, anything this year, it seems like has an asterisk next to it, right? Like,
right.
It's just the way it is.
Dan, you and I were, I mean, sorry, this was a private conversation. You can edit this out if you'd like, but you and I were chatting just the other night with Rob Ryan. We were talking about Clone Wars, and we were discussing your book sales. And I bring this up in order to promote your book, which everybody should go buy.
Thank you.
Dan has a book?
Dan's got a book, and everybody should go buy it. What's the best
John?
Way to buy it, Dan?
I say that every time Dan's book
John, I've got three books now. Let me just throw that knowledge on you.
Dan, what is the best thing people can do to support you right now?
Oh, well, people can buy the book. That's a great start. From any bookstore. It doesn't matter where. Buy from your favorite bookstore. I always advocate
buying... What's the name of the book, dummy? Give us the name of the book.
I've forgotten. It blanked. I just went numb. I went numb all over. It is the Aleph Extraction. It is...
I'm pretty sure it's the Aleph Extraction.
I hate you, John. It is available from fine bookstores everywhere. I always advise you, support your local independent bookstore. You can probably order it through them. Check both IndieBound, which is a site that sort of lets you search and see stock levels at your local bookstores. That's IndieBound.org. And they also have now partnered with a site called Bookshop.org, which lets you actually order online with a lot of local bookshops. So I highly recommend that. Or if you want eBooks, you can also go directly to my publisher, Angry Robot Books, and they'll sell you a DRM-free copy as both an EPUB and a MOBI, depending on what platform you use. And also send you a copy of The Artist, MOBI. No, nobody wants that. Nobody wants that.
That's
Hey, I went to high school with him.
That's Angry Robot.
Not even John wants that.
You swallow that a bit. And what is their website?
AngryRobotBooks.com. They're like robots who are angry.
Got it.
So there you go.
So now that we plugged that.
Thank you.
With No, seriously. Everybody, please go and support Dan. I don't want to have to deal with his emotional breakdown if his book doesn't work. here's the thing. The thing I was saying to you and Rob the other night was that, like, look, the book industry is going to have to factor this in. You know, like, I know first week sales are a big deal. I don't know that because you've told me that. And, you know, opening weekend for movies is a big deal. And I think across all of these sort of media industries, you're really going to have to factor in sort of the change in habits of the pandemic has foisted upon us, right?
Absolutely.
And how that works and how that looks is, I don't know. I really don't know. Some bean counters sitting at home with their kids pulling on their hair and asking to be fed, and they are like, I have no idea how to fix this.
I don't think anybody does. And I think it's going to look very different when we get to the other side of this. And the real issues, not to make this too heavy, but like the real issues are how long the systems can sustain themselves without being active, right? Like when you shut down production on TV shows or movies, you know, lots of people are now out of work, and hopefully the companies that they work for that directly employ them. And we're talking like, these aren't all people necessarily who work directly for the studios or the networks, right? Like there are subcontractors presumably working on some of these things as well. all of them. Yeah, like
I don't know this for a fact, but imagine ILM is sitting a little empty.
Sure. I mean, I imagine any places. Yeah. I mean, yeah, and some, like, right. some of these places can do work from home, but if you're like a, you know, let's say you build sets or something, right? Like,
yeah, right. Sorry. LM is building like a set bit of an right abstract now. Example. It's just because we have at least one friend there. But yeah, if you're doing costumes, you're building sets, you're doing anything practical, you're making shows work, like you're unionized and you're doing honest, hard labor all the time to try to get these things made, you're kind of out of luck right now. And what that looks like when we come back from this is going to be...
Right. Because, I mean, you, no one flips a switch and makes all those things just jump back into motion like there was no break, right? Like, there's some ramp up involved. There's a lot of work in getting, you know, all of this machinery running again. And... it's going to take some time, and there's going to be some casualties along the way because, like, you know, people can't spend several months out of work if they're not getting paid without trying to find some other way to make a living and feed themselves.
I have heard that they are trying to find ways to make animation possible. I think one of the big holdups with that is the fact that the equipment is so expensive,
right.
The machines, you know, the computers that they do it on is so expensive, but it is something that somebody could do. I mean, it's mostly people sitting at computers doing stuff.
You can buy them and mail them to
people.
If they
had the machines at home, they could technically do it. And so they're trying to make that possible so that they can at least continue to produce animated features.
Right. Well, so like one example I saw.
You can buy that equipment and then you can mail it to people. I know.
Yeah.
Big tech companies have invested in like, okay, this sucks. We're going to need to help you work from home. So,
yeah. And plus, it keeps the kids energy.
Here's what we're going to spend. Yeah. Yeah.
It works out for everybody.
The
very people who are making the movies need the entertainment in order to keep the kids off their backs.
Perpetual I love the idea machine. Of a 10-year-old doing all the tweening for like some animated show.
Well, I was going to say that it's interesting because I saw a statement somewhere, I think it was on a conference call, that the Disney, either, I can't remember if it was Iger or the new CEO, was saying essentially Mandalorian season 2, which is due in the fall, will still happen as planned because everything was shot and everything is in post-production. However, I also saw reports suggesting that that is maybe not the case for Falcon and Winter Soldier and WandaVision because they had not finished shooting. They had holdups. There were other things.
You're killing me.
Sorry. There were other things that had interrupted the filming process and had pushed the filming back.
So, just to be clear, John is complaining because he wants to see the shows, but you're not actually killing him. Stay home and stay safe.
I had my hopes on those, though, because I was like, well, at least we'll get, you know, those shows in the fall and I'll get my superhero fix.
But we'll see.
Through them.
We don't know. I don't know. There's no concrete details that I've seen about like how much wasn't shot, right? Like maybe it's a truncated season or maybe like they just split the season or maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't know how they handle that. So there's a lot of questions out there and no answers. And that's what we've delivered to
maybe
you
the
here.
Last four episodes are just animated.
Who knows?
Sure, yeah.
Could happen.
They
not
just
impossible.
Fall into an alternate universe and then everything becomes animated.
Oh, that'd be great.
It's like Spider-Verse, except, you know.
I would watch that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, John, you and I would
not
watch anything. We've just watched Captain America.
Yeah, right. We watched the 1990 Captain America.
You know what?
You made a whole
After our conversation last bottom. Week, I went back and finished it. Which I don't know. I don't think I like myself. Yeah. Because
no, I don't know why you did that, but
it was a bad idea.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad
don't
we all agree.
Yeah.
It's like wearing a
that's
hair
another,
shirt.
That's another
like
lesson for the kids these days.
Yeah, it's just
don't do drugs and don't follow my example.
Don't do drugs and don't watch the Captain America movie from the 90s. That's really all the life lessons John Moltz has for you.
That's it.
Well, that is all the life lessons we have for you this week. That is for sure. But we will be back next week to discuss the following episode of Legends of Tomorrow, which is entitled I Am Legends. And from the brief preview I saw, seems to be it's a zombie episode, everybody. Buckle in. That's episode 12.
Excellent.
There's only three episodes left in the season. Sad, but true. And yeah, I think we actually have some overlap with the beginning of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so we're going to have to figure that sucker out. But we'll be here next week, and hopefully you'll be here listening along with us, reading along with us, doing whatever it is you're doing at home. But I would like to thank my good friends and panelists for being here this week. Guy English, thank you for being here.
Shotgun Dan!
Nobody wants that. Nobody. John Maltz, always a pleasure.
Again, don't binge drink, kids.
Thank you all for reading along with us, supporting the show, and we hope you're all doing well out there. Stay well, and we will see you next week.